This week's conversation with Nicole Vogelsinger of Wild Boho is sponsored by Avlia Folk Embroidery. Designer Krista West has a number of new designs she introduced October 1 and several more coming in the next few months. To see all of the new and upcoming designs, watch the September 28 Fiber Talk Stitch Hour on the Fiber Talk YouTube channel. Not only did we see new cushion designs, Nisiros Leaves, Telos Primos, and Scandari Diamonds, but we saw some new fabrics, particularly the window pane cloth. The upcoming design that got several in the audience excited is Sea of Light. To purchase charts and kits, visit avliaembroidery.com and sign up for the newsletters so you stay up to date on new products. Thanks to Krista and Avlia Folk Embroidery for sponsoring the show. And now on to our conversation with Nicole Vogelsinger of Wild Boho. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artist this week, Nicole Vogelsinger from the Wild Boho operation. Oh, we got to learn about that. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, there's so many things here we got to talk about. First thing, all right, I got to know where does Wild Boho come from? Help me with that. And it's probably going to be something obvious that I should know about, but sorry.
Well, not really. It's not anything super exciting. I actually started, before embroidery and everything, I started designing jewelry that was metal and paper. I collaged things onto metal, and I also did like wedding jewelry. So it was kind of all over the place, and that's where the boho came from. And then when I started sharing embroidery things on Instagram, I just needed a handle. This was like 10 years ago, before Instagram was like hugely huge. So I just, you know, it's free-spirited sort of embroidery, and so it's Wild Boho.
Okay.
So a little story behind it.
Well, that makes some sense. All right. I looked up the boho part and got down the rabbit hole of boho interior design and that whole world. I didn't even know about that, so, because I, you know, interior design, whatever. But So
it's meant to be more of, the embroidery that I do is more free-spirited, meaning learn the basics, but then take off with it and don't be intimidated by rules or, you know, sticking to traditional embroidery. It's kind of like a branching out from that.
Yeah, that's what I know. I'm sure Beth did, too. Really enjoyed about your work and your designs is that the free spirit, go for it. See what happens, kind of thing.
Absolutely. I think that's what kind of gets people into it too. Like feeling like, okay, this is approachable. It's a craft that doesn't have a ton of rules. I can do what I like. If I like plain fabrics, I can figure out something to do with that. Pattern fabrics. Like there's so much you can do with it.
Does this help us understand why you didn't enjoy learning sewing and sewing machines from your mother because it's too much regimented to it?
Well, you know, I think it is. I think that also goes hand in hand with why I don't enjoy baking, because the recipes, I can't follow recipes to save my life. So anything that's regimented and with rules, I have a hard time wrapping my brain around that. So I think so.
Okay. See, well, the psychoanalysis goes with this whole thing.
Right.
So, yeah. Right. Yeah. We're here for you. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, my mom was sewed my clothes. She learned smocking to do dresses. She quilted. So I was just surrounded with all of that growing up. And I had my own little sewing machine that I could never, ever thread. And I think that's what got me stuck. Anytime I tried to thread the machine, it would end up in a jam. And I just got so overwhelmed by that that I that was my turn off to the sewing machine. So I always start with a confession to my students when I teach, because a lot of them are quilters. And I have to confess that my sewing machine is in a closet, like behind things that I grudgingly pull it out when I have to like hem a curtain or, you know, do a tiny little task. I keep a sewing machine for that, but it's not something I keep out and use often.
Oh, we're kindred spirits in that. I have mine is mine lives in the basement in a corner and I can get to it, but you know, it's not my friend.
I love it.
Best famous for her basement full of stash. So I can get to it. That's impressive. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you need it, you need it. So you need to be able to walk to it.
And, yes. But. Yeah.
No, I mean, I relate to that. I have a sewing machine that I use to edge fabric and do the odd job with. And when I have to change that bobbin, it's like, oh, no, here we go. You know, now like, oh, this is going to take half the day. And
yes.
You'd think by now they'd make it so that the bobbins would be easy to put in, but no.
No, it's true. No. It's always a process.
Yeah. The upper part I can get threaded. The bobbin is, come on, just. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Sewing machines, yeah, whatever. But it is interesting now, because you're not the first person we've talked to where you were exposed to needle and thread type things early on. And, you know, the sewing machine didn't stick. But as you've gotten older, you really have you picked it up. And, you know, it's that kind of thing where you're exposed and you may not do it for a long while. And then something triggers and you're off and running. And then now look what you do.
All growing up, I always had craft, like I always wanted to craft. And so I would do other things, anything other than sewing, you know, anything mixed media, I would try cross stitch, which also I struggle with because patterns, but anything non-pattern related. When I was in high school, taking art classes, I didn't think I was good at art because drawing like that just didn't come naturally. And I thought, well, that's what art is. So I'm clearly not good at art. But it wasn't until I started taking the art classes where you made things with your hands and you worked in ceramics or pottery. And, I learned latch hooking and weaving. And that's where I was like, well, if this is art, like this is what I love. So not traditional like drawing, painting art, but like the hands-on art is definitely where I found enjoyment.
Do you have an art degree?
I don't. No, everything that I've done, it's just me learning and playing with things over time, picking things up and just working a lot at it and experimenting, but no formal art training.
Well, that's okay, because you know, a lot of people just have it in them. They just see it. It works just fine.
Exactly. hasn't seemed to hold me back at all.
Yeah.
Because you have a unique color sense too. When you look at your pieces, you use a lot of bold colors. I think sometimes it's difficult for people. So you've got a great color sense.
You know, it's true. I kind of just think that's something that comes naturally to everybody, me throwing color together. And it is something that I see people struggle with a little bit when I, you know, have a workshop, or just the combining of, I like to combine lots of patterns and it kind of just looks like an explosion of color usually over here, at my house, which is not a bad thing.
No.
Have you, as you've gone along, have you just let your art and your color evolve, or have you actually said, you know, I should get a little formal training? Have you tried any of that, or it just let it be the way it is?
When I look back at when I first started sharing stuff on Instagram, just sharing my process, and I didn't intend for it to become like a business or anything. It was just something I did, and I had like a side Instagram page so I didn't have to flood my friends and family with pictures of what I was making. when I started it, it was very simple. I mean, you can go back and see it was like one fabric would be the background and then one fabric would be the applique. And I would just, you know, use the back stitch or the stem stitch, just very simple stitches. I didn't use many beads. I've always had beads because I would make jewelry with them and everything. But over time, it really has, I think my embroidery has changed a lot. And the designs that I do and the fabrics that I work with definitely have a lot more color and a lot going on. I'm really into texture and dimensional embroidery, just adding things you can see really well. So I think it has changed over time, and I am always learning. I'm always reading about embroidery and watching, you know, online classes and just always taking in, because I feel like, you know, you can never stop doing that. You can only get better.
Yeah, that is really clear in your work, that you're constantly pushing the envelope, always constantly looking to move on to the next thing. That really shows up in your work. It shows up in, and I haven't read any of your books, but just in the progression there. And your newest book coming out is yet another level of embroidery. And so, it's very clear that you keep trying to find a new level, which keeps it fun. Yeah,
it does. Yeah, my newest one adds a lot more than embroidery. It touches on like needle felting and fabric painting and stump work, like adding dimension, all things that I, during COVID, I mean, I was home a lot, everybody was, and I was just playing with techniques and experimenting with things. And that's kind of how that book developed, like just with all of my experimenting at home.
You're like, you said you touched on mixed media. Do you think that that's influenced your development also?
Absolutely. So my original, like with jewelry, I, you know, use like metal washers, and we had a scrapbook store nearby, which I don't even know if those exist anymore, but it was during a time when scrapbooking was all the rage, and we had such a cool scrapbooking store, and it was almost like a fabric shop because you could walk through and look at all of the papers, and it was kind of like my prelude into becoming crazy about fabric. It was crazy about paper and the designs and everything. And that's kind of how I got started with this. I would look at fabric designs and think, wow, these are really cool, but I don't sew. Like, so what can I do with them? Like, I really love this fabric, but why am I buying it? And so that's right. When I started, because I need a purpose. I can't just look at it. I mean, I can, but you need to do something with it.
you just talk to Beth and she'll help you rationalize it. You all
that's
be
right.
Fine.
Right. Yeah, you just take it out and you pet it every now and then. And
exactly. Exactly. So that's what I was doing with scrapbooking papers and then fabric is just the next level to that. And so I just started putting fabric in hoops and cutting and pasting, you know, attaching things, and then started to add embroidery to that. So that is like the mixed media is definitely where I got started. And I do think I'm always looking for what can I incorporate that's different into the next hoop and the next hoop, just always looking around and trying to find things to add.
Right. Why is it the hoop? I mean, nothing wrong with that. I'm not finding fault with it. I'm just saying, why is, because everything you do is in a hoop. Is it just the convenience?
Well, I do think it started because of portability. When I really, really got into it, I had a little guy and I was, you know, in one room of the house a lot of my day, up and down. And it was something that I needed to be crafting something. And it was something easy to pick up and put down, didn't need the machine. So I think it did come out of the necessity of having to have something small that I was working on. But I just really enjoy, there's just something about limiting myself to that shape and to what you can see within the hoop that I really do enjoy. I've done bigger things. I work on bigger hoops and, you know, I've embellished clothing and, you know, stuff like that. But my love is definitely what can I do within an embroidery hoop?
Because you're not the first one and you won't be the last one.
No,
that operates
exactly.
Within a hoop. It's just interesting because it is, I mean, it's a really convenient thing, but it's also a circle. So, you know, when you come to rectangular things, it's, you know, visually a bit of a challenge, I would think. But what you can do with a circle is fun, too. So,
yeah, Yeah, it's just something I enjoy.
Yeah. So that means the hoop collection is extensive then.
Oh, it's so extensive. And I'm always looking for more hoops. I mean, I have plenty, but I can't pass up the thrift store, you know, checking because thrifted hoops are the best ones you can find, really. They're just nice and sturdy and not splintery. And so, yeah, I'm always looking for hoops, even though I don't need them. But I might someday, so.
Right. You never know.
Exactly.
Preparing for end times. There we have it.
Yes.
That whole thrift store, that was the other thing I enjoyed about your work, is you take such advantage of trips to the thrift store for fabric and other things and incorporate those. And I just love the way you buy old cloth and cut out a shape or just put the shape in the center of a hoop and start embroidering on it.
I mean, when I go there, I'm looking for things that are good quality fabrics and also just fun and quirky fabrics like that you can find that are older. But like, and I feel guilty doing it sometimes, but like a nice wool jacket. But if it's really nice wool and I know I can't find wool like that at the store, I'll buy it and cut it up and use it in my projects. And I'm giving it a new use, which is a good thing, but it's also just fun. You never know what you're going to find. I think that's what I enjoy so much about, you know, going to thrift stores and looking at clothing. You never know what you're going to find, which is exciting.
So do you limit yourself to like cottons when you're looking at clothing, or are you an equal opportunity stitcher?
Yeah, I'll use anything. I will, if I find like, silk handkerchiefs and scarves are really cool to use, like to cut pieces from, or to just completely like not cut anything and use that in a hoop. And that's the foundation of your embroidery. It's something a little unexpected because you expect to see like a quilting cotton. So when you have like an unexpected fabric, that's really cool. So everything is on the table. I don't really, my only limit is, can I fit it in my sewing area in my studio, or will it take up too much space? Because I do have to be mindful of that. I live in a super old house with teeny tiny little closets that are barely closets, and I have a lot. So I have to be very picky.
I watched one of those videos. That studio space there looks like it's fairly well packed. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it is. It is. Well, that's also the problem when you're involved in so many different crafts. You have a lot of different types of things that you might need. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yep. It looks well organized, but packed. But I could tell, though, that the working table was cleaned off. Now, I don't know if that was just for the video or.
That's probably for the video.
Oh, okay.
I clean it off between projects. That's a good, like, okay, then I put all the beads away for that project. So in between projects, it looks beautiful. But while something's in progress, it's a mess of all of my supplies.
Yeah, that's what it's there for. Yep.
Yep.
So how did the business part come to be? Did that just evolve? Or did you sit down one day and say, I'm going to start a business?
No, it really did just sort of come together kind of naturally. When I was creating hoops, people would on Instagram ask if they could buy them. So I was like, oh, well, I could, you know, sell hoops. I sold them at craft shows, local craft shows. And so I just got started with that. Like just, you know, people would want hoops for a nursery or as a gift for someone. So I would make custom pieces. And then a few years back, I was approached by Lucky Spool, the publishing company, and they asked Suzanne at Woods at the time, she asked if I had ever thought of writing a book, an embroidery book, you know, using what I do as the basis for it. And I was like, huh, isn't that interesting? And so kind of went from there. I wrote the first book, and then from there I started teaching more, and then you know, the second book came about. It just kind of all happened naturally, and it felt like at the right pace at the right time. I was able to keep it manageable, which is important with the family and everything.
Yeah, well, that's the, at least to me, is the impressive part is developing a business while you're raising kids and managing a household and all those things too. Fitting all those things together is impressive on any front. So, yeah.
And not to say that it's not crazy at times, but it's nice that I'm able to be home for things that I need to be home for and work when I have time for that, you know, at night when kids are in bed or when everybody's at school for the day and stuff like that. It's just worked out well for us.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So talk about your design development. When you get to do a hoop, do we map it out? Do you just pick up a hoop and some cloth and let it go? How do you go about that?
Well, it all depends on the sort of project that I want to do. If I'm doing something with applique and lots of fabrics, it usually comes from a fabric and just wanting to do something with it. Like seeing something at the fabric store or online and thinking, yeah, this needs to be something. And so I just start cutting and seeing where that goes. If I'm just embroidering on a piece of fabric, which I do that a lot, like a fabric that already has a design, I don't have an end goal, like I can't see it through from start to finish as I'm starting. It really does come as I'm working on it. So I always tell people, like, it's called slow stitching. You're going to be sitting with your hoop and your threads and your beads for a while. So as you're sitting, or as I'm sitting looking at it and stitching, I get ideas about where I want to see the piece go. But it is something that comes as I'm working on it. Sometimes it comes because I want to give something to somebody and, you know, I'm inspired by them. And as I'm pulling things together, getting ideas that way. But a lot of the time it comes from fabrics or, you know, just sitting down and playing with the beads and the threads. It kind of all comes together that way.
I love how you do a printed fabric and take an object and put it in the center and start stitching on it. And I really got kind of excited about that idea of, you know, just go buy some fabric and look at this here. I think I can do something with this and just start stitching on it. What fun that must be. Yeah.
And picking something, like, that's why it's great, because every person can pick something that appeals to them, take the same basic ideas and put together a project that they will love to look at and to work on. Nobody's project is going to look the same as another person's, like, because we all have different interests and different loves, but it is really cool to see how using one method of putting things together, people can come up with something so different and unique to them.
So when you teach classes, do the students have a difficult time, that box of, you know, just starting?
Yeah, you know, that's why when we get started, I always say, let's pick a background fabric first and then set that aside. So that's one big decision that's already made. And then let's just start looking through our fabrics and start cutting out pieces that you think you might like to work with and to collage. You might cut out more than you're going to use, but having pieces cut out, that's the fun of collage. Like, just kind of blending things and layering and seeing where it's going to take you. And it is cool to see people start with an idea, but then come up with something completely different as they're working with the fabric. So I do think it is, some people embrace that and some people feel a little overwhelmed by the process. And so that's why we take it in small steps. Like, let's just look at some fabric you like and just start cutting out some things you like. And that takes the big end result away from it. And you just start to think through the little steps that you're taking to get there. I want people to have fun with it and not feel overwhelmed. The classes that I teach are always fun, I think, and not very strict and rigid. So.
So do you do like a more of a raw edge applique to the?
Yes.
Do you do a collage then?
Yeah, exactly. So it's raw edge applique if it's a collage, and the embroidery then goes on top of that.
Okay. So, and then do you have like a collection of threads you keep around, or it, you know, or do you have a certain to use?
Oh, thread. That thread is my weakness.
More than fabric?
I like fabric. I like fabric, but I really love thread. I have my wall of my Eleganza pearl cottons. I like there's the 3, the 5, and the 8 width. I love all of them. I love tapestry wool. I have these adorable little spools of anchor floss that I picked up at the craft store that are just really cute, which that's, I have a weakness for really cute things like that and a cute spool of thread. Well, I also like needlepoint yarn. I knit, so I do have a collection of yarns, and I'll even use like yarn in embroidery because I'm all about texture. So yarn, you can get like more texture and different texture than like a pearl cotton or a stranded floss.
Right.
So you can get
more depth from, because it's thicker generally and it's fluffier. Yep. When I think about it,
exactly. A lot of times when you see the stuff I post on Instagram, you don't really get that from a picture, but when you see it in person, you just want to touch it because it does have so much texture to it. And I love to add lots of different types of thread into one project. So you get like the shine from a pearl cotton, but like a more matte, thicker look from a tapestry wool. So it's fun to mix and match things that you might not think of putting together.
Mm-hmm. So if you're doing a project that you start with a blank ground cloth, not a printed one, and you start creating from that. How do we go about that? Is there a general idea? Do we sort out some colors and say, I'm going to use these colors and see what I can do?
Usually I start with a color palette.
Okay.
And so again, I always pick a background fabric first because that big decision out of the way. And from that, I just start pulling together the different beads that might work in a color palette. And I'll come up with like 3 or 4 colors, or to be honest, probably more than that, because I can't limit myself to colors, but I make myself create a palette that I have to stick to. And then I'll start pulling all the threads, and I'll just have a lot in front of me before I even get started with any embroidery. And a lot of the stitch samplers that I've been making lately are on just a plain fabric without any design. So that's a new level of, like, for me anyway, who I'm used to embroidering on a printed fabric that already has like, you know, the fabric design. I use that as the basis for my embroidery. Taking a completely plain fabric, just a solid, is a different level of embroidery to me. And that's one where I really don't know where I'm going from start to finish. And I just have to pick an area and get started.
Okay. So you choose the colors. Then does that have to just kind of sit for a couple of days and cook in your head and you start seeing how you're going to get started, or do you just dig in and hope?
I'll do both. So I have like a stack of things that I'm working on, because sometimes I do need to like let it marinate for a day or two before I jump into it. And in those days I'll be working on another project, and then I'll set that one aside to come back to this. And then when I get started, I'll just pick one stitch that I want to start adding. I love botanical things. So my designs are usually like floral or, you know, nature-y. So I just pick one stitch and one sort of design and just start going and see where it takes me. So it is very organic how it all comes together.
Do you try to start with a focal point, or does that come later? There's got to be a focus somewhere.
Yeah. Not really. Beads will come into it. Usually it's a stitch. Usually it's a new stitch that I want to try, or a stitch that I'm just really liking. And so, you know, if I'm doing like a satin stitch or something, I'll just make a shape and start filling it in and see what does it look like. Does it look like a stem? Does it look like I kind of have an idea if what I'm going to be making. Like, is it a fall scene from my garden, or, you know, is it mushrooms? Or so I do have like a little idea in my head of where it's going and what shapes I'm going to be working with, but I'll just draw like a circle and start working with some threads. And from there I might add some beads, and then I'll try another stitch. So it really, the ones that I do on solid fabrics are more of stitch samplers, where I limit myself to a certain amount of stitches and see what different ways can I use them and how can I incorporate beads and sequins so that it just looks right. Like so that it doesn't go over the top, but it looks right. That's a horrible way to describe it, no, but I just know when it looks right.
that nails it right there, because that's the kind of art you do. That's one of the things that bothers me about it, is that too often it's over the top. And you seem to be able to find just that right point. Because once it goes over the top, to me at least, it becomes a visual mess and there's no point to
it.
But you seem to be able to just get to that point and stop. And then yours works. And that's what I enjoyed about it.
Well, and a lot of times when I get to the point where I think I'm close to being done, that's when I'll take a picture of it with my phone and I'll set it aside for a day or two and look at it through my phone when I'm not in the room with my project. Looking at it on like something else, I can be objective about it and focus on areas that might need something, or I've taken things off before, like that just seem not right. So then I can be really critical. I mean, I think all artists are critical of their work, but I can be really critical with a piece when I'm not in the same room with it. And then I'll go back and fix things, and then I know I'm done.
Because that's one of the things, you know, crazy quilting is one area where the first few I saw, what is going on here? And then I saw someone, who at least in my view, did it right. And then that's when the light went on. Oh, I see what we're doing. And because too often it's kind of all over the place. And your work, there's a flow, there's a visual flow to it. I found my eye traveling throughout the hoop and exploring the different elements. And you had the textures, and you know, not only was I exploring on a plane, but I was also going up and down hills visually. And yeah, I just enjoyed how you put things together.
Oh, that's such a nice compliment. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's clearly thought and effort going into that, and it's not just throw it down and hope it looks good. And
right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right.
You basically just start and let it come out of your head then. It's not like you sit down and map something out and say, all right, I'm going to stitch this and then modify from there.
Yeah, it really does just sort of come together. And again, so many of the projects that I'm working on, it's not, I will never finish it in a day. If I finish it in a month, that's pretty impressive. It means I was probably not doing much else that month. They take a long time to put together. An embroidery is a very slow process. The collage part is probably the quickest step out of all of it. And even that could take several hours to, you know, come up with a collage that just feels right. So I do have you spend a lot of time with your project. That's why I always tell people to find fabrics that you love looking at. If there's something that annoys you about it, don't pick it, because it's going to even annoy you even more over the hours that you're going to spend with the project. So pick things that you love working with.
And you don't shy away from stitches. Just loved exploring to see all the different stitches. Are you teaching yourself all these? Have you done some classes to learn stitches? Or you just get a chart and go for it?
I love looking at books. I love books that are just detailed with pictures and close-ups. I really love when there's close-ups because I just find they're inspiring. It's inspiring to see what other people like to do. And even if mine looks nothing at all like it, I love looking at what other embroidery artists do. I love watching other like videos. I'm always looking and learning and then figuring out how can I make this look like me, like my stuff. And it might be using like taking a very traditional, which they're all traditional stitches, but then with the types of yarn I might use or the beads, like making it look like me and like my work.
So when it comes to stitches, spend a lot of time with a doodle cloth learning to get it just right? Or are you one of those people who can just dig in and have success right out of the gate?
No, I always have a hoop sitting by my desk that is not meant for anything except practicing. And that's where my stitch samplers kind of have evolved from, because that one little hoop that sits there, nobody ever needs to see it. It is for me to practice on. I encourage the people who take my classes to have a hoop like that, because a lot of times they've put together a beautiful collage and then they're afraid to actually stitch on it, which what is the worst that happens? You cut out your threads and you start over again. But having like a practice hoop is super helpful because you can just do whatever, make your mistakes, play with different textures, and then put it on your piece that you're, your project piece that you're working on. So yeah, I always have a practice hoop with me. And if I'm just sitting, killing time, I'll practice a stitch, or it's very relaxing too.
Yeah. We've talked about that a lot recently that, was it? Oh, I think it was Sarah Dennis we talked to in the UK who works on slate frames, and she has a slate frame set up and does that very same thing. That's just where she just goes to try things. And
yeah,
we're so attuned to getting a chart and some cloth and some thread and executing it. And, did it come out well? Well, maybe, maybe not, but it's okay to set up something on the side and just practice a lot and get better.
Right.
At it. Yeah.
And maybe there's stitches you just really don't enjoy doing, and that's how you find out what you enjoy doing and what what does relax you and what you like to work with. I've found that I don't like French knots at all. Those stitches stress me out. So I know I don't like them and I don't use them.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about the French knot. That one comes up when it comes to stitches, because some people just use them just automatic, and others just cannot get them to work right, and so they'll go to the colonial stitch.
Colonial.
Yeah. Yes, colonial. That's one of my favorites. I love that one.
Oh, that's where you go. Okay.
Yep. And I love them because I feel like I could do a French knot. I could do like five of them, and maybe one might look the way I wanted it to. And a colonial knot, I could do five of those and all five turn out perfectly right away. So French knots, I feel like they just waste my time because I'm not great at them.
Well, you have a lot of company in that camp.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. People will line up to complain about the French knot. Yep.
Right. But then the people who can do them, I mean, work that I've seen that's just full of French knots, it's just beautiful. And I know how hard that must be to get that way, because again, I don't like them. So I know how much time it takes.
Yeah. Everybody has their thing. See, now for me, French knot is not a big deal. And I didn't even know the colonial knot existed. I learned the French knot, and later on it was, oh, there's this other one. Well, I don't like the way it looks as well. So,
And for some reason, I can't do a colonial knot. I don't know why. Every time I do it, it looks like a big hot mess. And I'm like, okay, I'm going back to my French knot.
Thank you.
I guess maybe it's because I learned it.
Thank right. you, Beth. Thank you. Same for me. Yeah, I don't get the colonial knot. So, yeah, Those two, we got to have an afternoon with a room full of people just making colonial and French knots. Just
right. Exactly.
Yeah, just to see what happens. Yeah.
Yep.
No kids allowed.
Right.
Yeah. All right, so we have three books. Now,
yes.
First one, come to you and say, hey, would you like to do this? So that it, there's three books now, so it must have been a good experience. Did you enjoy putting that together?
It was. I when I was younger, I always wanted to be a writer. So I think just writing felt very natural, and writing about something that I enjoy doing, it was like the perfect pairing. I mean, it's a very stressful process, and there's so much that goes into it, because it's not only the writing of it, but it's creating everything that's in the book. But I did really enjoy it. And so when I was asked to do the second one, I was like, yes, I would love to do a second one. And then the third one really did come because I felt like time had gone by between the first two, and the things that I was doing were so different than what I was doing in the first two. And it just felt kind of natural to do that third one then, which isn't out yet, but should be coming out this winter.
So are you using the same publisher for the third book then?
Yes, they've all been with Lucky Spool.
Now, I have not seen them, and I have to admit that I'm just maybe ordering all three just because I have to have them. But the first one, the boho embroidery, 30 modern motifs, 20 traditional stitches, that strikes me as a book that gives a really solid foundation, just kind of a cover the waterfront. Here's everything. Here's your toolbox kind of thing.
Exactly. And from start to finish, you can make a hoop that involves collage of fabrics and incorporate embroidery into it. So yeah, that's just very basic. You'll get everything you need to know from that. The second one then delved into texture a little bit more. Some stitches that were more textural and incorporating those with the embroidery and with the applique as well. So both are heavy on applique and collage, but the second one is more textural.
Now, are they project books? I mean, are they filled with projects to do, or are they here's ways to do it and suggestions, go figure your own thing out?
Yes. So they're more, the first one is definitely more of here's what I did, take it and run with it. The second is more project based. The third one is definitely more technique based. There's a few patterns throughout it, but it's what can you do, like, what can you do with paint on fabric, like acrylic paint or needle felting? Like, you can make dimensional things, but what can you do when you incorporate it with collaged fabrics? Like, it's a fun mix of a lot of different techniques and beading, because I'm also obsessed with beads, so lots and lots of beads in the third one.
Yeah, because it seems that the third one's called Needles Out, Boho Embroidery Mixed Media Techniques, and it's out December 2022, and you can pre-order that. I checked. So you can pre-order it, but you really, it seems like you went to a whole new level with technique with this one, because there's some stump work in there and fabric painting and kind of raise the bar.
Yeah, it definitely, like, it feels like the book that I should write right now, because it's the culmination of like years of me just experimenting with things and what works and what doesn't work and what do I love working with. And it seemed to interest people too when I share things. People get excited about seeing like wool roving used in a collage with like needle felting that, and then adding beads on top of that. And like, it's a really exciting, I'm super excited about this one because of the next level that we took it to.
Yeah. How did that book come about? Was as you're working through your projects, are you making notes on the side? This could go in a book.
Yeah, that's exactly how this one. And it was over, you know, I think I started writing down ideas shortly before COVID, and being able to work on things at home. Like I had a notebook of ideas, and I just kept, every time I did something, I would make a note of it. And then finally I said, you know what? I think I'm ready now. I think I'm ready to do a third book, because it's a long process. And you work on it for a really long time, and you put a lot into it. So I wanted to make sure I was ready and had a lot of ideas, and yeah. So that one came together really through several years.
Yeah, putting a book together doesn't happen overnight, that's for sure.
And this one I'm really excited about because the photography, my other two books, I finished all the projects and sent them to a photographer, and then I would get to see the finished photos, but I wasn't really involved in that project, in that process. This one, I was really involved with the photography team. I got to be a part of all of it and give my thoughts on things. And it was such a cool, really unique experience to be part of that. We rented a Victorian, like a restored Victorian house in Jim Thorpe, PA, which was super cool. And the photos, I think, really are exciting. I really wanted it to be all about texture, and they come through in the photos for this book.
So then you feel the visuals in this one really deliver what you're trying to do, where they may not have done quite to that level with the previous books then.
Yeah, I think, I mean, because it was a photographer taking everything that I did in the past, I loved the pictures and I loved how those books turned out. But for right now, this felt perfect. And being involved in the whole process and seeing what goes into photographing a book is incredible. And also the backdrop, you don't look at my work and think it goes well with like a Victorian, like traditional Victorian house. And so the juxtaposition of the neon colors and the bright palettes that I use against that was really, really cool.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, a photographer on his or her own is not going to understand needlework. And if you're able to be there, yeah, that puts a whole new difference to it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I say that this book really feels like it's the most me, like it definitely, it has me all over it.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's great. So does that mean then a fourth book is in the early works?
Ugh.
Nope. Okay.
You know, I think I'm going to wait a little while. this one was a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah. Talk to me in a few years. We'll see.
Okay. All right. We'll check back. No, I understand that. I mean, they're just an awful lot of work, and and I'm sure there's, I think it's going this direction. No, it's not. I got to take it in another direction. I'm sure there's all kinds of stuff that goes on.
Exactly.
Before you even finish a manuscript. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah. So when I regain some sanity and brain cells and stuff, maybe I'll have it in me. We'll see.
Okay. All right. So now when it comes to teaching, what do we have going on now and coming up?
So I am just starting. I'm kind of excited about this. I'm hosting my own virtual embroidery workshops. I have the first one scheduled for November. And what's cool about that with virtual is instead of a in-person where a class would like gather around behind me as I demonstrate a stitch or talk through something, I can have a camera placed right above my work. And so everybody can see the same thing at the same time, which is so nice about a virtual class. And that's what I've really been enjoying. And that one's on dimensional embroidery. So that's exciting. And then in person, I'm going to be teaching a few classes at QuiltCon in Atlanta coming up in February. And they're combining
sewing like printed fabrics operation. And...
No, definitely. Definitely no sewing machines allowed in the classroom.
Oh, you're bad, Gary.
Yeah. So hand sewing only.
Okay. Okay. Just checking.
Yeah. I will be in rooms full of quilters, so it's a little intimidating when I know that they're all like amazing with their sewing machines, but
yeah, those people who can operate a sewing machine well, holy smokes, that's mind-blowing. It's like slow down, yeah. You're going to make a mistake.
And yes. And away they go. Yeah.
Exactly.
So QuiltCon, yeah. And then so those are live classes then.
Yes, those are in-person classes in Atlanta.
Yeah. Are you setting up additional online classes, or going to try this one and see how it goes?
Yeah, we're going to see how this goes, but the last virtual classes I've done have all, it's just very enjoyable. I think a lot of people enjoy having all their supplies in their possession at home, not having to pack it all up. It's just very relaxed, which stitching is relaxing. So it's a nice atmosphere able to do it that way.
This one coming up in November, then you have a kit for that. So people sign up, get a kit, or how are they?
No, I have together. Yep. They can use things. I give a lot of suggestions and tell my favorite things, but everybody can come to that with what they like to use. And I give lots of suggestions and help people decide what's good. And then it's for all levels too. So for people who might want to try embroidery, for the first time, we'll get them stitching. For people who, there's so many people who say, oh, I used to do this back in the 70s. I would embroider my jeans, and like, it's all coming back to me now. So it gets people excited to get stitching again too.
Yeah, that's the cool thing when you can get people like that where, oh yeah, I used to embroider my jeans. Yeah. How many? Yeah. They,
yeah.
They've done a lot. And then now they're older, have a little more time, maybe a few dollars more, and really can help them enjoy the hobby. Yeah.
Exactly. And they can see what they can do with it, which is fun too.
It's a lot more than a flower on a jean.
Right. Exactly.
Yep. Yep. Well, Nicole, this has been fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was really nice talking with you guys.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Wildboho.com. Wildboho.com is where you can learn all those things. And follow Nicole on Instagram, because it's just a visual treat all the way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Nicole, and thanks to everyone for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.